Now Clayton Margridge reads from and comments on an article in Jacobin entitled Against Bombing ISIS.
During the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld years of war on the Middle East, there was a bumper sticker that said, "We're making enemies faster than we can kill them." Well, a recent piece on the Jacobin magazine website by Greg Shupak demonstrates that we're still on that same endless path of escalation. I'm going to read and summarize parts of his piece. When ISIS claimed responsibility for the horrendous attacks in Brussels last week, President Obama said, "The U.S. and its allies can and will defeat those who threaten the safety and security of all people around the world," unquote. In other words, more bombing was on the way. The presidential candidates only disagree on the scale of military action needed to stamp out ISIS, not on the appropriateness of yet more American warfare. The idea that the U.S. can militarily defeat, eliminate, or destroy ISIS is based on the obviously false notion that ISIS consists of a discrete and identifiable set of individuals and facilities in a particular location. But ISIS is the product of long-term structural factors. To degrade and ultimately destroy the group, it's necessary to address the root causes of its growth. An American war promises, at best, a combat trophy and the spawning of new jihadist groups. Even if military intervention dispersed ISIS, the social forces undergirding it would persist, perhaps emerging even stronger than before. If ISIS disappeared, another existing or newly formed organization would likely swoop in to fill the void, ready to carry out ethnic cleansing and the occasional terrorist attack in the West. Well, what are these long-term structural factors? ISIS fighters are children of the U.S. occupation of Iraq, many of whom lost their fathers to jail, death from execution, or fighting in the insurgency. They are filled with rage against America and their own government. ISIS offers these humiliated and enraged young men a way to defend their dignity, family, and tribe. Douglas Stone, a U.S. general who oversaw Iraqi detainees at several military prisons during the occupation, says that every single detainee he encountered complained about the disintegration of security triggered by the American invasion. A German writer who spent 10 days in 2014 embedded with ISIS says the group's militants described the 2003 invasion of Iraq as a terrorist recruitment program and notes that ISIS was created 6 months after the start of Bush's invasion. Now, if that weren't enough in the shooting ourselves in the foot department, we are actually arming our opponents. At various points in the Syrian war, the United States and allies such as Jordan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates have armed a variety of anti-government factions. In 2014, U.S. General Martin Dempsey told the Senate Armed Services Committee that America's Arab allies were funding ISIS, and Vice President Joe Biden said the same. Joshua Landis, a Syria expert at the University of Oklahoma, estimates that 60 to 80% of the arms that America shoveled into Syria have gone to al-Qaeda and its affiliates. Well, so what drives the U.S. and its partners into such an apparently counterproductive policy? Canadian political scientist Jerome Klassen points to the U.S.'s adoption since World War II of what he calls hegemonic liberalism. That's a strategy that ties the spread of capitalist relations across the globe to American diplomatic and military primacy. Our overall objective in the Middle East is to remain the predominant outside power in the region and to preserve U.S. and Western access to the region's oil, and that's according to the Defense Department. In fact, a 1997 Defense Department publication noted that one of the purposes of U.S. military policy was securing uninhibited access to key markets, energy supplies, and strategic resources. a transnationalist capitalist class has now come to rely on the U.S. military to direct and enforce global capitalism through what Klassen calls armored neoliberalism, the joining of the economic logic of global exploitation with the political logic of disciplinary militarism. Under Obama, the Joint Forces Command has argued that the U.S. military underpins the open and accessible global system of trade and travel that we know as globalization, and provides safety and security for the major exporters to access and use the global commons for trade and commerce. The war against ISIS is also about building the infrastructure for tomorrow's wars, sprinkling new bases and military outposts throughout the Middle East. With each base the U.S. builds, it fosters an environment not simply more hospitable to ISIS, but one that could create a group so ferocious that it makes ISIS look tame by comparison. Now, given the political and economic weight of those pushing these policies, undoing the present state of affairs is a considerable task. It would require wiping out the capitalist social relations that underlie imperialism and replacing them with democratic modes of production and exchange. In the immediate term, however, people living in member states of the U.S.-led coalition, and that means us, can organize against aerial bombardment and boots on the ground. Not only is there no military solution to the wars in Iraq and Syria, but such action impedes the diplomatic and humanitarian remedies that can get at the source of these conflicts. These remedies include facilitating unconditional negotiations, halting U.S. military support for the Syrian opposition and ending the Syrian war, pushing for the meaningful integration of Sunnis and other minorities into political life in Iraq, and pressuring Turkey to stop allowing ISIS to freely use its border. Policies like these could cause ISIS to wither. The U.S.-led coalition's military-heavy approach, by contrast, risks killing ever more Iraqis and Syrians without putting an end to the horrors that ISIS and its political equivalents continue to inflict. The problems created by imperialism will not be solved by more imperialism. I've been summarizing and quoting from Greg Shupak's piece on Jacobin, The Case Against Bombing ISIS. The upshot is that we seem to be on a slippery slope of expanding terror. On one side, the terror and rage created among Arab populations by U.S. and European bombs and drones, military bases, anti-Muslim hate speech, and police and vigilante violence. And on the other hand, more young people joining jihadist groups like ISIS, more terrorist attacks on Western targets, leading in turn to more bombs and drones, and so on in an escalating spiral ending who knows where. I'm Clayton Morgridge for the Old Mole Variety Hour.